You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
He's bad, he's beautiful, he's crazy, it's...
Rich Eisen.
But we start this program today.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
With two words, question fatigue.
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
You got a good Taylor Swift story for me?
She makes a mean homemade pop.
Earlier on the show, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero. Coming up, Bucks general manager Jason Light. Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Mannix. Co-host of ABC's Live with Kelly and Mark, Mark Consuelos. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. We're about to hear from the general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Jason Light. And then we're going to throw open the in-studio doors for Chris Mannix, talking about the NBA and everything that went down last night, everything that's going down with about a month to go before the playoffs, right? Playoff spots up for grabs. We've got play-in tournament games up for grabs and things of that nature. So we'll talk to Chris Mannix about it. Mark Consuelos is in studio, hour number three. Lots to talk about with him. He's got a son in the Michigan wrestling program. So we'll have a little bit of Go Blue chat right there. And he's in town with his wife, Kelly Ripa. They're doing an After the Oscars special on Monday on ABC. Next month is his first year anniversary since joining Live with Kelly and Mark. And so we're going to be talking Oscars later on.
Love it.
So do you want to do a weather report for Sunday here in Los Angeles, Mike?
I actually...
It should be easy.
One of the hottest days I ever had in my life was at the Oscars. You have to wear a tux when you do the red carpet show.
And I know that, Mike. I'm aware.
Did you wear a tux that time you went for the pod?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
First year... I rented both years, obviously. I don't own a tux.
Okay.
First year, I wore dress shoes.
Okay. Oh,
big mistake.
Big mistake. Next year, went with the low top, all white Converse.
First time I ever covered spring training in the Grapefruit League in Florida for SportsCenter, I was so excited. I wore a full-on suit and tie to name one of the hottest places in the state of Florida.
Wow.
I did that, and they were all the baseball writers like, what the hell is the matter with you? And we're standing there in their shorts and their Hawaiian shirts. And I'm like, I got to do a stand-up. They're like, then bring your suit, change, and do it. Next day, I was just there in shorts and then put on a suit just from the waist up. Yep. That's it.
Exactly.
So I'm with
you. It's hot.
Yeah.
Someone who knows all about the heat in the state of Florida is the general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, kind enough to join us here in a very busy time. Jason Light, good to see you. Jason, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Well, I heard part of your press conference, even though I'm sitting here on this set. You were with who when you learned Mike Evans re-signed with your team? Who were you with, Jason? What?
So John Cooper, the head coach of the Lightning here in town, has become good friends with he and his wife, with me and my wife.
Okay.
Phenomenal guy. And he had a charity event Sunday night, rooftop of a hotel downtown. So Blair and I snuck out, my wife and I snuck out. And we're still kind of ongoing here with Mike and his representatives on the contract. And as I was standing at the bar with Wayne Gretzky, in between Wayne Gretzky and David Wells, of all people, I listening to them tell stories about their prime. It's, you know, let's just say I probably could have hung with them for a couple days, but maybe not a couple weeks. But they, I had to go outside, take the phone call, got conferenced in. We agreed to terms with with Mike, and I came back in and was fist pumping and hugging my wife, and they said, "What's going on?" I said, "Well, I just, you know, agreed to terms with Mike Evans," and the great one said, "Oh, that's a great one."
Huh? Hey, yeah. Nice. Okay. Yeah. You knew that already, but to get it from the great one, I mean, that's the ultimate.
It's pretty surreal. I've never met Wayne Gretzky before. I've run into David Wells a few times here in town, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I bet so. And by the way, obviously, if you wanted to have a cold one and to celebrate something like Mike Evans re-signing, I cannot imagine David Wells being a better individual to, you know, crack one open with, you know?
We had a few. We had a few pre and then during and after.
So congratulations on that. Obviously, everyone knows how good Mike Evans is, but what he means to you and your community and your organization as well. So why do you, I'll let you give the, take the floor as to why that was so important for you to make sure that Mike stays with your team.
Well, you know, he's such an extraordinary player. He's done some unprecedented things. He does every game, but every year, 10 straight years of 1,000 yards, it's amazing. And it doesn't seems like down here in Tampa a little bit, because of the market, we're a little bit get forgotten about. And it wasn't until this year, I think, that, you know, for doing it 10 straight years, it finally hit, kind of went global, and everybody realized how good Mike is. And so, and as good of a great of a player he is, he's even better off the field, him and his wife Ashley with their foundation, and what he means to so many kids. He's such a role model. It's the first domino that needed to fall, and in this year building our team, it was very important to us, and he's just means so much to me personally as well, but that's beside the point. What he means to the fan base and to the organization is what's important.
Well, I mean, the next domino that everyone assumes that you needed to set up to tumble into that domino with the Mike Evans signing is, of course, Baker Mayfield. That was the general assumption of, okay, that's one way to suggest to the guy who came in and you gave the opportunity to, and boy, did he knock the door through, that you mean business to keep everything on the up and up. Is that a safe assumption?
Well, it certainly helps. We definitely want Baker back. We're working through things right now. You know, the player always has an option too, so it's got to work out for him, and I'm going to give him the respect of making decision what's best for him too. But I know he wants to be here. I know we want him. It's just a matter of us trying to work through things. We always have to prepare for both scenarios. Hopefully we're not preparing. We're not going down, you know, behind door number two. Hopefully we keep it him with door number one. But, you know, I don't want to take anything for granted with him. He's got to make a decision as well as we do.
So, you know, there are other teams in on him right now, Jason?
Well, I'm not saying that. I mean, I'm sure he's a good player. I'm sure there's other teams. I'm sure there's other teams that would like to have his services. You know, I mean, we pride ourselves here on being pretty good evaluators, but I don't think we're the only ones that think he's a good player. So I'm sure there's other teams that would want him to play quarterback as well.
No, and obviously, listen, I don't want you to reveal anything you're uncomfortable revealing, and of course, give away negotiating positions and things of that nature, Jason, but what's your timeline? You want to do it before windows open up for everybody on Monday? You want to do it over the weekend? What do you need? What are you thinking for yourself? Would you like?
Well, ideally, I'd like to do it before things open up on Monday. But if it has to go to there, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's gone. I'd like to hope at least not. But we'd like to. We're not going to press the panic button, and you know, and neither are they, I'm sure, on their end, to rush anything right now.
What do you think worked so well from your end last year for him to come in the circumstances in which he arrived, and then obviously put you in a position to maybe knock out the Detroit Lions so close in that divisional playoff game, Jason?
I think his whole persona and his that giant freaking chip he's got on his shoulder at all times meshed perfectly with our team, and just the general consensus feeling that our team had is being forgotten about. We're kind of in witness protection down here sometimes, and people felt like forgot about us, and didn't pay attention to us and didn't realize that we actually do have a pretty good team and good coaching and great organization. And I think that his chip and our team's chip meshed well together. And I think that's kind of what did it, what made us stay together.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a special guy to always be the guy after the guy. Certainly when the previous guy was named Tom Brady, for crying out loud, you know, and that's not an easy role to step into and succeed in. But that's now twice, though, in this interview, you've been mentioning that you're not mentioned enough or I shouldn't put it that way. You're not mentioned with the respect you deserve down in Tampa. What do you mean by that, Jason?
No, I just think, you know, we've got some great players down here. Mike, we talked about Mike. We've got Levante David. Hopefully he's remains a Buck. We're trying to work through that too. And I think in some other markets, they would be, well, a little bit more well known and would get the notoriety that they deserve. So it's, and this is, I love it the way it is. It's, you know, it gives, like I said, that chip comes out in you.
Mm-hmm.
The lower expectations sometimes work in your favor. So, we got a phenomenal fan base and living in Tampa is a dream. I can't see myself living in any other city. So it's nothing against Tampa. I just think sometimes we just get forgotten about.
Yeah. Did I see you call out one of the NFL media colleagues, Connor Orr, at the combine for how he predicted you finished? Did you go, like, are you taking notes? Do you have like lists in that office there, Jason? Are you writing down names?
You know, I have a family that is really into it, and I think that's very okay. important in this business. And
they're out there. They're taking down notes as to who thinks your team's not going to.
Including myself, we have a receipt box at home. So, Connor predicted us to win two games last year, and that one kind of stood out. I picked it up on my wall here in the office.
Is Sapp out there helping you with the receipt department? Because that seems to be his forte. Sapp would be one of those guys. You know,
yeah, well, he's a phone call away. I can tell you that.
Jason Light here on the Rich Eisen Show. You mentioned Levante David. Who else from the championship years of recent memory are you trying to stick and stay with this team right now? Who else from your fan base that won it all with these players that you'd like to stick around, that you're working on, that you're willing to share, Jason?
Well, we franchised Antoine Winfield, who I think is a phenomenal player in this league. One of the better defensive players, yet alone safeties in the league. And that's with the intent to get a deal, long-term deal done. So we started to work on one. We just kind of ran out of time up till the deadline. So we'd like to continue to work on that, have him here long-term. We'd like to work on a long-term deal with Tristan Wirfs, who's one of the best tackles in the league. We would like to get Levante back. So we've got a number of players. I'm forgetting about some right now.
Sure.
We'd like to have back. And I just feel like, you know, they'll get their due. It's once these deals get done, if they get done, that, you know, people realize we've got pretty good players down here and we've got pretty good staff and coaches and scouts and front office that have done a nice job putting this team together.
Couple minutes left with Jason Light, Tampa Bay Buccaneers general manager, drafting 26th overall. How does one plan to draft in the bottom third of an NFL draft order, Jason?
Well, fortunately, we were just meeting about it again the other day, going through the scenarios of what could be there. And I think this is a really good draft this year. I think there's a lot of good players. I know you hear that. That's kind of general manager cliche. But this year, I feel like it's kind of the same as it was last year. We started to get excited what's going to be there at the bottom of one and the bottom of two. So, you know, fortunately, there's a lot of players that we have a lot of needs on our team. So we'll be able to go best available. We've talked about some scenarios of moving back and collecting picks. We've talked about one or two guys that we'd love to go up and get too. So still early in this process. We've got some holes to fill. We know that, but that's kind of the exciting part about it. As far as we made it this last year, that we still know that we've got some holes that we need to fill.
When do you usually get a phone ringing from a colleague of yours, or you ring another colleague's phone to talk about these trades? And are we still too early right now? on that?
We're still way too early. So okay. Sometimes they don't come until Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon of the draft.
That's wild. I mean,
so a lot of people wonder what you're doing on draft day, like Thursday, you know, the haze in the barn per se. So on Thursday morning last year, I was had a leaf blower out blowing leaves from my pool deck and walking the dog. So that's it wasn't like the movie Draft Day where I was doing last minute recon, finding out that a player didn't have anybody show up at his birthday party. But the rest of that movie was pretty good.
I like it. Did you have that in your pocket, Tristan Wirfs, no matter what? Couple years ago, did you have that, Jason?
Yeah, you know what? No, I did not, but I did have Mike Evans no matter what that first year.
I bet. No doubt about that. Okay. And so before I let you go, so much conversation going on about kickoffs and what's going to be going on with maybe onside kicks or having a different, I guess, spring league versions of kickoffs. Where do you stand on this subject matter, Jason?
You know, I'm not educated enough on it right now to really have a real true opinion on it. I just want to know what is it going to be, number one, and then what do we have to do to take advantage of it and the best that we can. So I would like to see if it's across the board at level playing field and everybody we're forced to return kicks.
Yeah.
I think that's great. And, let's try to go out and get the best person available to take advantage of it.
Okay, then let me ask you about it this way. You could wave a wand and have the competition committee place in front of membership and have membership approve. The rule would be what, Jason? You could make it happen.
You're putting me on the spot here.
What do you got? You know, come on. You got to have one.
I'm worried about signing our player back here right now. I'll leave that up to the special teams coaches.
Okay. All right. I'm just talking about any rule in general. I was just trying to go on that front. No? Okay, good enough. Did you see Baker get in the cage with Aaron Judge? Did you see that one, Jason?
I heard about it. I did.
Okay. That hasn't been
part of it. How do you fare? I didn't see it. How do you fare?
Oh, look at the stance. I mean, look at that. Did you know he's lefty? He hits lefty. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Look at that.
Look at that elbow. Look at that perfect 90-degree angle right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and the Yankees are down there in Tampa, right? I don't know if the Rays
right across the street,
Street from you. So I don't know. Is that again? I don't reveal the negotiations. Is he threatening to be like Dion, Bo Jackson? Is that what's happening right now? Is that part
that
of
that hasn't come up yet? Okay, that hasn't come up yet. Good. We're across that bridge.
We can confirm that. Very good, Jason. Thanks for the time, man. It's always a pleasure always running into you and having you on this show. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Likewise.
Best of luck. Best of luck being present as a dad and a husband over the next 90 hours, Jason. Good luck.
Appreciate it.
You got it, brother. That's Jason Light, the GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right here on the Rich Eisen Show, and he's negotiating with my boy right now. That's the win. Honestly, I'm sure part of this as well. I'm sure he doesn't want to be sitting in these draft meetings going 26th overall. Which quarterback's going to be available? Right.
Trade up?
No. Baker is the guy. Like they, you saw what you saw, and I kind of dug what he said is that Baker's chip matches their chip, because after they got the chip with Brady, and then Brady leaves, everybody's like, well, that's been a nice run down there, and they win the division, albeit last couple of weeks didn't light the house on fire, but they won and done. The Eagles convincingly, and then showed up to Detroit and said, okay, we know you got a chip on your shoulder and you're biting kneecaps, but we got some teeth here too. So running it back with Baker's the win. Is Chris Mannix here? Did he arrive here on the Rich Eisen Show? So I hope so, because he's next. Let's take a break. We're back here on the Rich Eisen Show in a matter of moments, talking some association with Chris.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, the radio audience will return in less than 2 minutes' time. So first of two times, I say hello once again to our great friend from Sports Illustrated, DAZN. Good to see you, Chris Mannix. How are you, brother?
I'm good. My goal in this appearance, Rich, is to not put my foot in my mouth as I've done in recent appearances. I think it was last year I called the Denver Nuggets boring here, and I got roasted for months on social media. Last time I was here, I was making the point about how Caitlin Clark can be a star, you know, can do that three-point shootout next year in the WNBA. I called her Caitlin Cooper, who is this great writer in Indiana who I was reading earlier in the day. So if I escape this without making a major gaffe, I'm going to call it a win.
Okay, so should we turn Chris Brockman, if you will, into the stat boy, for the lack of a better phrase?
Sure.
Keep track here.
Yep. Let me grab a pen.
You know, so he'll keep track to make sure.
Fact check.
Do you want it immediate or do you want it after?
After.
Okay.
So
we kind of an errors and omissions segment.
Yes. Got it.
All right.
Okay, great.
Because we can do it in real time for you. You
I
prefer
feel like
to
that
just
might
keep going.
Rough up my flow there a little bit, you know?
I don't know why that caught me. So, okay, so let's not. Chris, can you be?
I got a Mannix E/O. I got it ready to go.
Okay.
Errors and omissions. Ready to go.
Yeah, because the Nuggets aren't born.
No.
Okay, so that's a correction.
Boring. That's correct.
And
if you were bored by last night's game,
we got a problem.
How is Caitlin Cooper's jumper? Do we know?
I don't know.
It's not as smooth. It's not as splashy.
I know she is a terrific X's and O's journalist.
Okay, good.
Out of Indiana.
And let's see if Caitlin Clark could do that.
Can Caitlin Clark write? That's the question.
Let's find out. Okay, we're off to a roaring start. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Our favorite from Sports Illustrated and DAZN, talking hoops and boxing with our friend Chris Mannix here on the Rich Eisen Show. You know, I know the Celtics and the Nuggets played last night. Anthony Edwards was awesome as well. But I based certainly on the conversation we just had off the air, we got to start with the fact that Jake Paul and Mike Tyson are fighting. Wow. On Netflix.
Shocking.
This is... Where the hell did this come from?
I mean, it's been in the works for some time now. Yeah. Jake Paul, just this past weekend, beat a guy named Ryan Borland, who is a oil rigger in North Dakota. So Jake was on...
He's running out of people to fight?
Exactly. Jake, the last couple of fights, has been going down this traditional boxing path. Now he is making the hard pivot back to celebrity boxing, and he's doing it against... arguably the biggest star in modern boxing history in Mike Tyson. I was taken aback by this, Rich, because I knew that Jake had been on the hunt for a big name. I just figured it was going to be someone like Conor McGregor, who has expressed interest in fighting Jake in the past. A rematch with Tommy Fury, who Jake fought last year. I didn't think a Tyson fight was going to happen, but here we are with the biggest or one of the biggest social media stars ever, biggest or one of the biggest boxing stars ever, fighting on perhaps the biggest global platform ever. I think this is going to be an event unlike any other.
So anybody who gets Netflix will just be able to just watch that like you're watching the latest Adam Sandler movie?
It's
like, is that basically
like
what it is?
Details are still, there's a couple of details still scant. One is, well, it's not going to be pay-per-view. It is going to be on Netflix, so it's going to be streamed.
You just have to pay for Netflix.
Right.
That's about it.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And because of that, I think this has the potential to be the most viewed boxing event ever. I mean, there have been some widely watched boxing events. If you go back to the 70s and 80s when this was on basic television, ABC fights, those put up huge numbers. This one, though, I could easily see this fight attracting 100 million viewers because globally, Tyson has a name. Amongst a young audience, Jake Paul has a huge name. So I think regardless of what you think of what this fight is in the ring, and we can get into that, that the audience for this is going to be absolutely massive.
Massive. So what is a 58-year-old Tyson going to look like against, how old is Jake Paul again?
Jake Paul is 27, so a 31-year age gap between Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. Jake Paul has been an active fighter. He fought four times in basically one calendar year. Mike Tyson has not been in the ring since that Roy Jones exhibition 4 years ago. I know people have kind of pointed to Mike's social media pad work, but Mike himself has come out and said, like, every time he does one of those mitt sessions, he needs like a week to rest and take time off and let his body recover. So you've got the once styled baddest man on the planet who perhaps can muster 30 good seconds of power punching against a YouTuber turned boxer who has become, in my estimation, a pretty good boxer. So that's a long way of saying I have absolutely no idea what I'm going to see in the ring on July 20th.
Which is maybe its greatest selling point from the Netflix point of view, or Jake Paul and Tyson. But
on a real note, though, Rich, like I do wonder what the state of Texas is going to do there. Now, this was billed in the press release as, maybe I'm saying this wrong, a boxing mega event. They didn't say like a sanctioned 10-round fight. And that's probably because Texas has to figure out what they're going to do with it, right? If they make it a exhibition like we had with Roy Jones and Mike Tyson, shorter rounds, six rounds, that's one thing. If they allow it to be a traditional fight, which I really can't fathom. Like, how can you sanction Mike Tyson
at age 58?
At 58?
He was using a cane a couple weeks, months ago, wasn't he?
The craziness of all this against a 27-year-old guy in Jake Paul, who, say what you want about him, he can punch. He really can punch. That's the great unknown in all this.
Oh, my God. Well, when was Tyson here? 8 years ago? 7 years ago?
Yeah.
Just quickly look it up.
Sure.
Because he was sitting in that chair. It's the one time he's been here in the studio. And I've told this story before, so for those out there listening who... March 2015,
Yeah, March of 2015.
Okay, so we used to have a radio clock where I would have to take a 60-second break right around now, middle of the hour, at some point. It was at my discretion. And I didn't really like it because, again, in the same way that you just mentioned, like, you know, busting up a flow, a conversation's going well, I knew I would have to stop it in the middle for a 60-second break. And I wasn't a big fan of it sitting from this chair. Certainly when Tyson's coming here, I wanted to get a conversation going. So that said, I asked Tyson right around now in the hour, hey, how many rounds can you give me right now? And so this was 2015. This is 9 years ago.
Yep.
Okay. So just as he's about to turn 50, I'm like, how many rounds can you give me right now? He goes, I don't want to answer that. And I said, you know, why? He said, because anytime I think about, you know, getting back in the ring or anything associated with the boxing, it puts me in a very dark place. At which point I'm like, well, let's take that break right now. And I was happy to take a break. He says, it puts me in a dark place. So maybe he gets out there. That's like, what are we going to see? What will we see if he really, the old Tyson potentially just shows up even for a flash? Look, you know what I mean? Like
Tyson, when he fought Roy back in 2020, actually looked pretty good. And there were times during that fight that I thought to myself watching it, I'm like, if Mike turns it on and really lets his hands go, he's going to knock Roy out. I mean, Roy, another long since faded former great. I think he was even more punchy at that point. And Roy was a smaller fighter coming up in weight to fight Mike Tyson. But I remember watching that fight thinking, like, if Tyson wanted to, he could dial it back, land a big left hook, and this fight could be over. So I still think that's in Mike Tyson's repertoire. That's why, like, the first round of this fight against Jake Paul if Mike wants to make it interesting, it could get really interesting. If it goes beyond that, like remember, when Mike retired in 2005, he was bad, right? He got knocked out by Kevin McBride. He had no passion for the game, didn't want to be in boxing anymore, was only there for the paycheck. Then he went on and did, I think, one or two of those exhibition fights that were weird with headgear. But if he wants to just turn back the clock for a very brief period of time, I think he can still do it. That's why I think the first round, if he decides, if he becomes, go back to when he fought Peter McNeely. Peter McNeely, remember that fight, came just bull in a china shop, rushing Mike Tyson, which was insane because then he got his clock cleaned right after that adrenaline rush left him. If Mike comes out and goes right at Jake Paul, I don't know what can happen.
You're saying there's a chance, though.
I think, look, it's not even a round, forget that, like 30 to 40 seconds. Because after 30, 40 seconds, he becomes a nearly senior citizen in the ring. All right? Like, because, and look, it's different because Evander Holyfield was not the puncher that Mike Tyson was. And Evander Holyfield fought a guy named Vitor Belfort, who is big, strong, and a little bit crazy. But if you watch what happens to an old man in the ring when they're in with a young, strong guy. Evander Holyfield, when he fought in Florida a few years ago, he got a beating. Like, and that was tough to watch because at some point you're watching and going, all right, this isn't fun anymore. I don't want to see 55-year-old Evander Holyfield getting his head caved in by a younger guy. Similarly, I don't want to see Mike Tyson getting carved up by a 27-year-old Jake Paul.
I remember just, and then we'll move to the NBA in a second with you, Chris, that back in the day when I was really just got started on ESPN, Peter McNeely, that the name brings up this memory. I was making fun of Peter McNeely on SportsCenter, you know, having a good time. And I remember looking down at the old computer system that we had. I think it was called Basis or something like that back in the day. And you would get a top line message from somebody, a coworker. I remember I got a top line message from a producer named Billy Fairweather. It was a big, you know, New England guy, Billy Fairweather. And he just wrote me, careful making fun of Peter McNeely. And then the next one came in. His brother is a producer here at ESPN. and he ran out of space. And then the next one came back as, and the words were, is big. Three messages came in. They kept flashing. And I could
Do you? Like that.
Look
that,
out. And he, what is he? Is big. I'm like, okay, got it.
That Tyson McNeely fight was one of the very first fights I can remember watching back in, what was it, 92, 93, right after Tyson got out of jail. And I'll never forget sitting there watching it and seeing Peter McNeely, who's from my neck of the woods, from the Boston area, face to face with Mike Tyson. And Peter's got this smile on his face and he's bobbing left and right. And Mike Tyson's not moving. His eyes are, though. His eyes are going left to right with Peter McNeely. And I remember, even as a teenager, sitting there thinking, like, that guy's dead. Like, he's dead.
But that was every Tyson fight.
August 95.
That was essentially every Tyson
fight. Can I tell you a real quick Tyson story? Sure. Buddy McGirt, Hall of Fame boxer, trainer, he told me once, he trained Clifford Etienne, who fought Mike Tyson back in the 90s. And he was in the locker room with Etienne. And Cliff was like, he was motivated. He was ready. He was good to go. He's telling buddies, like, I'm going to win this fight. I'm going to win this fight. I'm ready. I'm going to knock this guy out. Gets in the ring. He's the first one to go in the ring. Next up, lights go out. The DMX music or whatever it is plays. Yep. Here comes Mike Tyson. Got that half-cut towel over his neck. Takes it off. Throws it on the ground. Glares at Cliff. And Buddy goes, in that moment, I could literally see Cliff's spirit leave his body. And that was it. First round, Clifford Etienne gets knocked out.
I mean, you name it. Every even media types. I remember Jeremy Schapp told me a story once about how Tyson was at a press conference where an old school one where people were saying who they were before their question and saying who they were affiliated with. And somebody introduced themselves as being with UPI. And he refused to answer the question. And the guy's like, "What? Why won't you answer my question?" And Tyson said, "Because you messed up the delivery of my package." That actually happened. I mean, we could go on and on here. Let's do this. Let's take a break. And if you don't mind, we'll come back. Mm-hmm. We'll reset and we'll come to the top of the hour and we'll talk some NBA, some great fun stuff about that. Tyson, when is this? What's the date on it?
July 20th.
Just, I mean, what a perfect time, right? I mean, right before NFL training camps.
Yeah, nothing going on.
That's not a bad spot.
Yeah. They're doing an AT&T stadium. They're hoping to get 80,000 people into that building for that fight.
Oh, my God. And it could be like an old-school Tyson fight where it's over just like that. Except,
or it could be a sloppy mess where a senior citizen's getting beat up. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know.
He can't hit him with the cane, can he? I shouldn't say these things because, I honestly should know better when it comes to Mike Tyson. We'll be back, talk some association with Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated. And then still to come, Mark Consuelos in Hour 3 talking Oscars. You want to talk about changing subjects? That's coming up.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Ever meet Ali?
Yeah.
What was that like?
I was 1978 or 77. I'm locked up in Spofford Juvenile Detention Center. And all of a sudden, we come down, we watch the movie The Graded. And then next thing, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, Ali walks in.
Into your detention center?
Yes.
What was that like?
Pandemonium. And I was only 11. Maybe I didn't really understand. I heard my mother mention called him Clay around the house. And
yeah, sure.
I didn't know who he was. As time going, I found out who he was from the show, of course. And that was good inspiration. I started, after that, I got transferred to another place where it was a gentleman, Bobby Stewart, who was a former fighter who started teaching me how to fight. And then he introduced me to the legendary trainer, Customato. And then I saw Roberto Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard fight. And I wasn't sure what I was going to be a fight. I was just happy to get out of that place.
Sure.
But when I saw them fight, I knew, ooh, that's what I want to do in my life.
That's what, when you saw Duran and Sugar Ray fight, that's when you said, that's what I want to do. How do you get into the mindset to go ahead and knock somebody like Marvis Frazier out in 30 seconds?
You know,
Robert Coley in 37 seconds.
It doesn't happen overnight. It happens when you're a kid, and you have to be that person before you become that person.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? I think I know what you mean, but I'd love to...
It's a lifestyle. You have to live that lifestyle at a young age. I just lived that lifestyle. Never had girlfriends. I trained all day. I watched fight films all day. I read fight magazines all day. Every conversation I had with somebody was about fighters, who you think would have won this and that. Just like guys that love basketball, baseball. Who you think would have won? Who you think's the best? Kareem or Oscar Robertson? Or
sure.
Who you think's the best? That's all I was. You think you could be him? You thought it'd be him. Match the guys with the past, with the guys with the presence and this and that. And that's all I thought about.
All right, Jake Paul. Canvas is yours.
Wow.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network with our friend Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated and DAZN. Okay, so what do you make of last night's Celtics and Nuggets game? If this was the NFL, we would be just be hair on fire how the Celtics are not going to win at all because in the same way in this that the Cowboys couldn't get past the Niners, that might be a poor analogy, but I don't know if we make anything of this, do we?
My takeaway is that the Celtics can't beat Denver because, I mean, Jason Tatum wide open, 40 seconds left with a chance to take a lead. He's making that shot 8 times out of 10. So the Celtics were right there at the end against Denver. The takeaway, though, is right now Denver's the best team in either conference. I mean, Denver doesn't have the most wins in the West, but they are the best team in the West. They're a team that... pretty much saw the calendar turn to February, mid-February, and was like, okay, let's play now. They've got 7 wins since the All-Star break. They have been rolling along. Nikola Jokic is putting up outstanding numbers. Michael Porter Jr. is putting up outstanding numbers. Their young players are starting to take off again. You watch Peyton Watson in that game last night. Second year guy. Looks like he's a third or fourth year guy, able to play big minutes in the postseason. They are as complete a team in the, as there is in the NBA right now.
So Jokic is your MVP?
I have said that I want to see how the regular season winds up in the West. Right now, the top two guys on my ballot are Nikola Jokic and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I saw Shai play in LA a couple of nights ago. Not his best game, not a great game for the Thunder. But if Oklahoma City, which had zero expectations to be this good coming into the season, if they wind up as the number one seed in the West, and Shai, who is putting up the kind of numbers that we haven't seen since Michael Jordan's heyday in the late 80s, early 90s, and haven't seen since Steph Curry's unanimous MVP year. If he's putting up those kind of numbers and they're the number one seed in the West, going to be really tough not to vote for him.
Let me throw one out for you here that's kind of crazy if you keep that standings up for one more second here out West. What if the Clippers wind up being the one seed? Nobody's talking about Kawhi, right?
Yeah, and believe me, I get that from Clippers people all the time. You know, why aren't we talking about him? Why is he not?
They've got 40 wins. They're three games behind the Timberwolves right now. I mean, there's definitely enough time in the next month for the Clippers to just keep winning more than not. I think they're just two losses out right now.
I think the only argument against him is perhaps his numbers are not going to be what Jokic, what Shai, what Luka are.
But that's not his style, right?
I mean,
it's just everything else that might not show up on a stat sheet, or a defensive stop that doesn't show up on a stat sheet, you know?
He's the best two-way player in that MVP race right now, although Shai is really good on both ends. And he has been part of the reason the Clippers have been able to seamlessly integrate James Harden. A lot of that credit goes to James Harden. A lot of that credit goes to Russell Westbrook, who's taken on a lesser role this year with Harden in the mix. But it's the end result is that his numbers are not going to be on the level of some of the other guys he's competing with. So if you're looking for the argument against him, it's probably those numbers are at the top.
Well, Anthony Edwards had a final 90 seconds last night in a game, obviously, that for four quarters was outstanding as well, where he basically took it over both ends of the floor. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Andrew Nembhard's trying to tie the game, and Edwards hit his head on the back of the rim. Is that what happened?
I mean, one of the great blocks that we've seen all season long.
Right?
One of the great blocks we've seen in years. I mean, Carl Anthony Towns said over All-Star Weekend that Anthony Edwards is going to be the next face of the NBA. And the more you watch Anthony Edwards, the more you believe that, because he is the complete package, right? He can score, he can rebound, he can distribute. His shooting numbers are really good. And he's a two-way player, as we saw at the end of the game last night. So, you know, it's good that he's getting that type of exposure, because he does have face of the NBA type potential.
So when we expect Karl Anthony Towns back, what do you think for me?
I mean, first, can we just say brutal awful for Minnesota?
I know. I had not heard it until Chris told me in the middle of the show yesterday, because I've just been so in the tank with so many other things going on. It just gutted me, man, to hear that. But is it possible first round of the playoffs? He
possible.
Can come back?
The way the Wolves are framing it is that they'll evaluate him in about 4 weeks, which puts you at right around the end of the regular season, maybe a week or so to go. So it's certainly possible he can be back for the first round of the playoffs, but it's a meniscus tear. It's a knee. Nobody really knows how his body's going to respond to it. And nobody really knows how long the ramp up is going to be to get him back out there. And look, all that injury certainly shakes up the entire Western Conference landscape, because now if you're one of the play-in teams, and there are some big names in that play-in mix, Golden State's there, the Lakers are there, you've got Phoenix is there. Now you're looking at Minnesota thinking, all right, Towns is either going to be out or working his way back in that first round. You want that eight seed. If they're number one, and look, a lot can happen next month. They might drop to three or four. I mean, it's that close at the top.
Right.
But I think you're going to start seeing, or you will see towards the end of this month, early next month, teams starting to look at Minnesota saying, all right, how do we get that matchup in the first round if we know Towns is going to be out?
Chris Mannix here on the Rich Eisen Show. What about the other injured stars and how to expect their returns over the next 3-4 weeks for the playoffs? Who else you got for me?
Who are we talking about here?
Julius Randle for the Knicks?
Oh, Randle will be back. Yeah. I mean, look, the Knicks, you know, everybody you know, cheered the Knicks when they made all these deals, right? They get OG Anunoby, which is a great deal. They get Bogdanović, good deal. They get Alec Burks, good deal. None of that really matters, though, in the playoffs. Depth is the most overrated thing, I believe, in the postseason. In the postseason, it really comes down to your stars outplaying their stars. So, for my money, Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle have to outplay Damian Lillard and Giannis. Have to outplay Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley. Have to outplay Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. That's been a problem for the Knicks in recent years. Julius Randle, the numbers are there. He has been bad in the postseason. Jalen Brunson's scoring numbers were good last year, but look at his three-point shooting. It went from low 40s to low 30s. That's got to change. So while I applaud Leon Rose for doing what they did to stretch out the depth, and I think OG, as a defender, is going to make a big impact, this is going to come down to Brunson and Randle proving they're a better 1-2 than the other 1-2s out there.
And meanwhile, they might have to play an opening round series on the road in Orlando. We had Jamal Mosley on yesterday. I really enjoyed our conversation when he was on yesterday. I mean, how real could this run? You know what I'm saying? I understand we just established the Celtics are the Celtics, and you got the Bucks with and the Cavs feel destined with the, you know, Strus throwing one in from 60 feet and then coming back on the Celtics like they did. And we're not even, you know, mentioning the Sixers out there until I just said those words. Well, what about some of these teams like the Magic that nobody were talking about?
Well, the success for the Magic is winning a first-round series, right? It's unrealistic to expect a team this young to go into a second-round matchup with Boston or Milwaukee and win. They're just not there yet. But I think they have enough to win a first-round series. Defensively, they're great. They've been great all season long. Offensively, they have really turned a corner over the last 10 games or so. Their efficiency numbers have gone way up. Franz Wagner, very good player, really good player. Paolo Banchero, really good player. Like, they have got some horses there. And while they're an efficient three-point shooting team, they're not a high-volume three-point shooting team. So they're looking for the best shots wherever they're coming from, and they're able to cobble together enough offense to get it done that way. So if you couple that with great defense and good enough offense, it might be enough to beat a Cleveland team in the first round. It might be enough to beat the Knicks in the first round. So I think they're in play to win a first round series.
Okay, but after that, it'll be we're back in a pumpkin.
To me, it's you're barreling towards a Milwaukee Boston conference finals.
And then in the West, what do you got?
Denver will be there, no matter what.
Nuggets and
put them in a Sharpie in the conference finals.
It's tough to not sit here and think the Clippers, straight up, you know, and because not only in the same way that you had mentioned, you know, hey, credit to Kawhi, credit to Harden, credit to Russell Westbrook. I mean, Ty Lue is one of the best out there.
He is. He deserves. He won't get it. Look, Coach of the Year is the easiest vote ever. It's Mark Daigneault in Oklahoma City. Like, that might be unanimous. It should be unanimous. Right. I mean, they're close to the number one seed right now. Look, the Clippers, Paul George will show up, I think, in the playoffs. Kawhi Leonard will show up in the playoffs. What do we get out of James Harden in the playoffs? That's a big question with them. Harden has been fantastic for that group. When I talk to people inside the Clippers, they bring up how long they've been looking for a distributor. All the point guards they've gone through, Rajon Rondo, John Wall, Russell Westbrook, they have not been able to find anyone to aptly man that position. James Harden has done that. You look at how they've been able to close games. I think there's something like 32-2 or something like that when leading after the third quarter. A lot of that's a credit to James Harden, who is able to, you know, run the offense effectively late in game. So if Harden continues this trend, if he can be this guy in the postseason, they've got a chance to get to the conference finals. I'm not sure anybody's beaten Denver, but if this is the Clipper team that gets into the postseason, the conference finals is definitely there.
All right. And what did Barkley say yesterday? What did he say about the Celtics? He
said again, if they don't win, it's like not a choke. He didn't use the word choke. He used a different word.
Big failure, didn't you say that?
Yeah, basically just like, well, they need to win the championship.
It's not a failure, I don't think. Look, it's a failure if they don't get to the NBA Finals and if they're not competitive in the NBA Finals. If they wind up going up against Denver and losing in six or seven games.
Total gag job is what he called it.
There you go. Okay.
Well, here's the problem. When people get down on Boston, it's when they have three-point shooting nights like they had last night. I forgot the numbers off the top of my head, but it wasn't very good. Every 6 weeks or so.
Like 11-37?
Every 6 weeks ago, the Celtics have one of these games, right? They just the shots just aren't falling. Sometimes the defense, sometimes themselves. But every 6 weeks that happens.
Yeah.
In the previous games, though, they're high percentage, top five in the NBA in three-point shooting. They're high volume. And if you can be high percentage and high volume from three-point range, you're going to keep chucking them up. How did they get back in this game in the second half? It's because Porzingis came out and nailed back-to-back threes to start the game. How did they close the gap in the fourth quarter? It's because Jrue Holiday made back-to-back threes. They are a three-point shooting team and always will be. They'll live by it. They'll die by it. And because they have real three-point shooters, more often than not, they're going to be successful.
Lakers or Warriors go further?
I would say Golden State. They've won, what, 14 of their last 18?
Draymond triple-doubled, man. I mean, like, that's the old school right there.
I worry about Golden State against bigger teams because if you're going to play Draymond that much of the five,
yes,
bigger teams going to beat you down. And if they wind up with Denver in the first round, that's going to go badly for them.
I hear you, but Giannis, they were shutting him down, right? Nonstop the other night.
He
every single time he was backing down somebody smaller than them.
He had to pass it.
He had to get rid of it.
They were motivated. Like they were coming off a 52-point loss.
That's true.
Like they were motivated coming into that game. They're back at home. It was a great win. Don't get me wrong, but I think against bigger teams, they're going to have a problem. The Lakers, though. Look, I was here this time last year talking about the Lakers are going to make the NBA Finals. I bought into the Lakers after all the trades. I'm not there with this team now. I haven't seen any evidence to suggest that they're going to be able to get it together to beat a top-tier team. They are what they are, Rich. They're middle of the pack offensively. I think they're still middle of the pack defensively. They're a middle of the pack three-point shooting team. They're a very average team who have two elite players who can close games for you. But am I buying D'Angelo Russell in the postseason yet? Not really. Am I buying Austin Reeves playing better than he has this season? Not really. I just don't see enough to make me believe that team can make a run.
Thanks for coming, brother.
Anytime.
Yeah, I loved it. I had no idea we'd be talking Tyson, Jake Paul as much as we did. It is fascinating. There's no doubt about it. Hour number three coming up. You've got What's More Likely, right? I've got a top five Saquon Barkley destinations list. Mark Consuelos is in the green room. We'll talk about the Oscars and, of course, Michigan Athletics. His son is a wrestler there. And I appreciate you coming on here. Let me know anytime you're back in town. You've always got a spot here. That's Chris Mannix right here on the Rich Eisen Show on a busy Friday. We've got about a minute plus left here on Roku. You mentioned Karl-Anthony Towns saying Anthony Edwards is going to be the face of the NBA. Isn't that Scotty Barnes? Didn't I hear that?
A lot of faces of the NBA.
No, I thought that was Coach Darko in his fantastic rant, right? When he had, like, what, two free throws to the Lakers, $90 million?
Remember that game? Was that that
game? Remember that one? You were at that game. You came out, and Scotty Barnes is the face of the NBA. God, I love that.
Good player. Yeah. Edwards, I think, better chance beat.
Hi, Reg.
Chris, real quick, before you go, can we talk about Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia? I saw you sitting at that one interview.
I don't know what's going on with Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia is, it looks like he's in the middle of a nervous breakdown. And no one seems to be willing to pull the plug on this fight. I am a huge Ryan Garcia fan, always have been, but he's out there talking about the Illuminati and he's talking about all these conspiracy theories. And look, putting that aside, he's not in the mental, doesn't look like he's in the mental place to be ready for a fight on the level of Devin Haney. So I have my concerns about Ryan.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on here, man. Fantastic. Where are you going next?
Lakers Bucks tonight.
Lakers. I don't know, man. How do you do? Errors and omissions.
Nothing.
Perfect.
I got no
clean
notes.
Sheet.
No notes.
Clean.
All right. First time
clean
in a
sheet.
Long time.
Clean sheet.
Right. Wow.
Well done.
Well done.
Somebody on Twitter will find it.
That's true. Back on the Rich Eisen Show in a sec.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.